Chill Radio. Chill Radio. Chill Radio. Chill Radio. Chill Radio. Faster than a bleeding pullet, more powerful than a loco's motive. This is the Thursday Impressionistic News Hour for the 12th of May, 2005. Happy birthday, Jason. So, you know, the way things are, the news is just so sad. It's just so miserable. So the Impressionistic News tries to gather things from various sources. But one thing I have special today is that I have an interview with a condom manufacturer. And, you know, despite how bad things are, we can still fuck. And that's the theme today, partially, on the Thursday Impressionistic News Hour. So, you know, it's killradio.org. I'm coming from Los Angeles. I'm reaching out across the world and across time. It's 6 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, 5/12. And that's Rowan Kirk. And it's all somewhat good. Not really. Keep listening. Press your ears against the speakers. It's time. Woo. Okay, first off from the lyingmediabastards.com website, thank you, Jake Sexton. He reports that yesterday the Senate approved an emergency spending bill for the war on terrorism. It's already been passed by the House and is scheduled to be signed by our idiot-in-chief tomorrow. Buried within that spending bill was the text of the Real ID Act, a shady security plan that will institute a national identity card that takes one more axe swing at that thing we used to call privacy. And it doesn't keep much safer either for a cool $120 million. But buried within that Real ID bill, there is this amazing statement here that, let's see, Section 102C of the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act is amended to read as follows. In general, notwithstanding any other provision of law, the Secretary of Homeland Security shall have the authority to waive and shall waive all laws such secretary in such secretary's sole discretion determines necessary to ensure expeditious construction of etc., etc., and that there will be no judicial review. In other words, this means that he can waive any law that he thinks is necessary to waive to do what he needs to do. And since this bill essentially prevents the courts from having any statement about what he does, what's to stop him from waiving any old law? Oh, hooray. Hooray for freedom. Hooray. Hooray for freedom. Hooray. Hooray for freedom. Hooray. Hooray for freedom. God damn it. A papyrologist at Oxford University announced that new techniques in spectral imaging, which make it possible to decipher previously illegible ink on papyrus fragments, have yielded parts of a lost tragedy by Sophocles, a novel by Lucian, and an epic poem by Archilochus. Researchers also applied the technique to 3rd and 4th century manuscripts of the Revelation of St. John and discovered that the number of the beast, contrary to popular belief, is 616, the area code of Grand Rapids, Michigan. This is the weekly news in review from Harpers.org, they're the good guys, folks, and KillRadio.org here in Los Angeles. I'm Bennett, your faithless host, and this was posted Tuesday, May 10th, 2005, by Paul Ford, and this does concern the news of the previous week. A Washington woman found a snake with legs. Locusts plagued Bangladesh, and Zimbabwe was at risk of famine. More than 100,000 Americans were working at home answering customer service phone calls. And this is supposed to be a good society. In Iraq, two F-A-18 Hornet jets collided in midair. A suicide bomber killed 60 people at a police recruitment center. By now, you should know that if you're in Iraq and you're trying to be a policeman, you're going to get killed. And there were gun attacks, too. 14 bodies clad in white robes were found in shallow graves, and Saddam Hussein's nephew was arrested. President George W. Bush announced the capture of a major facilitator and chief planner for the Al-Qaeda network. The captured man turned out to be a mid-level Al-Qaeda operative named Abu Faraj Al-Libi. He used to make coffee and do the photocopying, said a former associate. Nevada Senator Harry Reid said Bush was a loser, while Virginia Representative Jim Moran described Bush as someone who does not read books, who surrounds himself with sycophants, and who has his ass kissed by Dick Cheney. Dick and Bush. A second case of polio was reported in Indonesia. I thought we got rid of that disease. And an outbreak of meningitis in India killed 15. Now, here's another thing. If you're ever going to go to some South American country and ride in a and go riding around the mountains, make sure you do not ride in overcrowded buses. Seems like about 40 times a year in South America, buses plunge into ravines. In Peru, a bus fell nearly 1,000 feet into a ravine, killing 40. Back when I was a kid, I got the World Book Encyclopedia, and every year we'd get this yearbook update on the world's events of the year, and I always took a special interest in deaths, in, you know, multiple deaths and things. And inevitably, every year there were a dozen or more bus falls in South America or Mexico, with dozens and dozens of people being killed. Meanwhile, a Providence, Rhode Island man attacked a goose and stomped its goslings to death. And two swans were stabbed to death in the Bronx. Vietnam decided to vaccinate 600,000 birds for avian flu. Turkey banned 4 porn channels from its satellite TV network. Texas lawmakers were out to stop sexy cheerleaders. And Norway, there's a Enlightened Place declared striptease an art form. A study showed that babies have favorite colors, but that they like brown the least. Brown might mean dirt, said a researcher. IBM announced that it would fire up to 13,000 employees in Europe and the United States. It was the 60th anniversary of VE Day. The German ambassador to London called on Britain to change its attitude towards Germany. They continue to see us as Nazis, he said, as if they have to refight the battles every evening. Around 3,000 neo-Nazis rallied in Berlin. President Bush attended a display of Soviet pageantry in Russia. An online casino bought the Pope's old Volkswagen for $244,800. And in Chicago, a vandal painted the words Big Lie over a stain on a roadside wall that many people believe is an apparition of the Virgin Mary. Onlookers wept as a road crew, hooray, covered the stain, hooray, with brown paint. The Department of Homeland Insecurity announced that it had wasted a great deal of money and needed much more. U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez said that most of the allegations of abuse by detainees in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo Bay do not meet his definition of torture. After all, it was all that one, you know, Lindy England's fault. She did it all, so. The United States was sending prisoners to Uzbekistan so that they could be tortured more fully. In Uzbekistan, the most common torture techniques are beating and asphyxiation with a gas mask. However, victims can also have their genitals shocked, their toenails plucked out, and they can be boiled to death. It was revealed that soon after September 11, 2001, the CIA sent a team of agents to Afghanistan with orders to capture bin Laden, kill him, and bring his head back in a box. Can you imagine little Georgie on television holding up a box with bin Laden's head in it? I bet that would have won him a lot of elections, right? Bloodthirsty asshole country. The United States. Spain gave 700,000 illegal immigrants amnesty. And Nassingbé, the son of the former president of Togo, was named president of Togo. Sounds like GH and GW, huh? 18,500 people have fled Togo as a result of election violence. Wish there had been election violence here. A secret British memo from July 2002 summarizing a meeting between Tony Blair and his security advisors was made public. The memo states something that we already knew, that Bush had already made up his mind to go to war to Iraq, despite any claims, lies that he makes to the contrary, and that intelligence and facts about Iraq would be fixed around the policy of going to war in Iraq. We knew this. So that's why the media just treats it like, well, it's no big deal. It's no big deal. The fact that we were lied to, that's no big deal. 88 members of Congress signed a letter written by Representative John Conyers of Michigan calling for an inquiry into the memo. This should not, said Conyers, be allowed to fall down the memory hole during the wall-to-wall coverage of the Michael Jackson trial and a runaway bride. It was revealed that the runaway bride once shoplifted and got caught. Two grenades were set off outside the British consulate in New York City, damaging a flower planter. Tony Blair won another term as Prime Minister. England's Prince Harry entered the army. The mayor of Spokane, Washington, an opponent of gay rights, was accused of being a pedophile. He insisted that he cruised the internet only for men of legal age. Ave Maria University, a Catholic college, founded by the retired CEO of Domino's Pizza, graduated its first class and gave an honorary degree to L. Paul Bremer, who told the assembled graduates that Muslim extremists were against the separation of church and state. A Baptist church in North Carolina booted out 9 of its members for being Democrats, and a 17-year-old woman was thrown out of her village in India after her stomach swelled up. Villagers believe she was carrying the devil's child, but the swelling turned out to be a 33-pound tumor the size of 5 fetuses. The Kansas State School Board began 4 days of hearings on how to teach the origin of life. All of the witnesses in the hearing were opposed to teaching evolution. 12 new moons were discovered orbiting Saturn. How many do they have now? 75 or something? In Victoria, British Columbia, a man was barred from a civic meeting because he was dressed as a giant piece of feces named Mr. Floaty. And in San Francisco, 12 penguins died from chlamydia. The FDA announced that men who have had gay sex in the last 5 years will not be eligible to donate sperm anonymously. And a college student in New Jersey unearthed an 1888 interview with Walt Whitman, in which Whitman gave advice to young men pursuing a career in literature. First, he said, don't write poetry. Second, ditto. Third, ditto. I'm telling you, this news is the real poetry, don't you think? Of course, you know, the opposite of poetry is science. This has been the Weekly News and Review from Kill Radio and Harper's. Gee whiz, thanks for listening.
Cut myself open and put bags of goo in my chest. But I want something different. Something less safe. Something old school. I want married men at the mall to stare at me. I want to look fat in shirts. I want to meet Joe Rogan.
Mentor silicone breast implants. The big old bags of goo that probably don't give you lupus.
With Michael Ruse, a philosophy professor at Florida State University. He's got a new book coming out later this month called The Evolution Creation Struggle. And he joins us from Tallahassee, Florida. And from Baylor University in Waco, Texas, William Dembski, a PhD in mathematics and philosophy and an associate professor whose research focuses on intelligent design. And Dr. Dembski, let me begin with you and pick up where Jim Wooten left off just a minute ago.
I just want to say real quick that this little George Stephanopoulos interview with Ruse and Dembski, I think is fascinating. Dembski, of course, it doesn't really get the fact that what he's doing is, you know, Ruse is correct here, is that is just religion in masked clothing. But he also doesn't get how he's being used by the creationists. This is about the theocracy.
The argument that's really at the core of this debate, that intelligent design is religion, not science.
Right, well, I think you can turn it around also, that even the whole evolutionary side, that there are fundamental religious questions at stake. I mean, when somebody like Stephen Jay Gould will write, ever since Darwin, we know that we were not created in the image of a benevolent God, that's a religious or anti-religious statement. So it seems that there are religious implications to intelligent design as well as the evolution side. Now, my own emphasis is on the actual science that's there. This is not just going back to an old way of looking at things. There are genuinely new results with intelligent design. Methods of design detection, for instance, how do we detect the evidences of design in biological systems? Can we do that reliably? There is a body of literature that's growing about that, which is in the peer-reviewed literature.
But the evidence is overwhelming, yes. And it's been tested again and again and again that evolution is valid, hasn't it?
Well, what are we talking about? If we're talking about common descent, universal common ancestry, I think there's good evidence for that. But if we're talking about the mechanism of evolution, how did all this great diversification and complexity come about? There's great diversity of opinion within the scientific community. I mean, you're going to have somebody like Simon Conway Morris, one of the world's leading paleontologists, who's going to say in an article in Cell a few years ago that when it comes to how evolution happened, we don't know. It's an open question. So, yes, I mean, if you go to the biology textbooks, there's this illusion of consensus, and a consensus trance, as it were, that everything is set and nailed down. But when you go to the highest levels of the academy, talk to the scientists, there's a lot of controversy whether the mechanisms of evolution that are out there, like natural selection, random genetic errors, genetic drift, things like that, whether they're actually capable of doing all this quote-unquote design work that we see in biology.
An open question, Mr. Roos?
Well, you know, I'm sure that God loves Americans. I'm sure he even loves Kansans, but I reckon he must be tearing his hair out right at the moment. I mean, this is the good old-fashioned debate between science and religion. And as far as I'm concerned, and as far as the scientific community is concerned, ID, intelligent design, is religion tarted up to look like science to get around the U.S. Constitution. I mean, Bill's quite right. There are debates in the scientific community about evolution. There's debates in every scientific community, and thank goodness there are. But science would be really boring if there weren't debates. But there's not debates about science versus miracles, and that's what's going on in Kansas right at this moment.
You know, in Kansas, let me show you the change they want to make in the definition of science. The current definition in the school board standards is human activity seeking natural explanations for what we observe in the world, and the proposed change is to a systematic method seeking more adequate explanations of natural phenomenon. Mr. Roos, why is that such a big deal?
Well, it isn't, of course. I mean, that's the whole point, this kind of flannel language which is used so that they can get through the separation of church and state in America. But, of course, what we know is more adequate explanations. What we know in Kansas, what they mean by that is, let's bring in some miracles, folks. And intelligent designer is the God of the Old and New Testament. It's as simple as that.
Well, I'd like to speak to that. I mean, the key problem with that definition is, what does it mean to be a natural explanation? From the vantage of my colleagues and I, intelligence is a perfectly natural explanation. We use intelligence to explain all sorts of things. Archaeologists use intelligence to explain the artifacts they find. The search for extraterrestrial intelligence could not take place without having a category of intelligent causation. But what they mean by natural explanation is not something that could include an intelligent cause. What they mean by natural explanation is a materialistic, reductive explanation. It's matter and energy and their interactions, and that's it. And that is something that is highly contentious, and it's philosophically driven.
But Bill, you're not being entirely fair here. You really don't think that there's an intelligence, let's say, on Andromeda, say a PhD student on Andromeda.
It doesn't really matter what I think about that. Is what are the actual claims that intelligent design is making? I've been invited to speak at the Oxford Center for Hindu Studies. I mean, they accept intelligence. I have Buddhist colleagues. I mean, they're not theists or Christians in any traditional sense. I mean, why are they embracing intelligent design?
But what is intelligent design then, Bill? Are you seriously suggesting that there's a designer somewhere else in this world, in this universe, which is creating humans down here on Earth, creating other organisms down here on Earth, that we're some kind of PhD lab experiment? Is that the kind of intelligent designer are you talking about? Or are you talking about the big fellow in the sky, you know, the great optician?
Well, when we're talking about the kind of intelligence, you know, I think that takes that's downstream in the logic. What we're talking about is, are we dealing with intelligence at all?
But Bill, you can't just simply say that's downstream in the logic. Let's not talk about
that's what we're dealing with in Kansas.
Let me stop you both right there. We have to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Get this wedge into the schools. They're going to throw you overboard because their real goal is to get creationism back in the schools.
I don't quite see it that way. And, you know, when, in terms of being used, I think everybody uses everybody else. I mean, this is an opportunity for me to get my ideas out. So, you know, the right-wing extremists that you seem to be referring to are reading this stuff and bringing these ideas to the fore. So I see that as useful. But are they going to do that? I don't think that creationism is really a live option anymore. I mean, I think it's been roundly defeated through Edwards v. Aguillard. So I just don't see how you're going to be able to parlay intelligent design into a full-blown young earth creationism. I think it just doesn't hang together. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see where it all shakes out. But from my vantage, I mean, it is the Darwinian materialists who are the much bigger problem in all of this than the right-wing politicos.
Is he being duped, Mr. Roos?
I think he is. You know, when the theocracy comes, I wouldn't want to give much for his chances. I mean, I'll be sent off to some camp to be reformed, but poor old Bill, you know, gosh knows where he's going to end up. No, the simple fact of the matter is that this is just a wedge strategy, which is what the ID leader, Phil Johnson, has said. And we know perfectly well that people like Henry Morris and LaHaye, the chap who writes those end time novels, and all of these other people are using people like Bill Dembski, who is a lot more reasonable than, as he says, the kind of fundies out there. And once they've got their foot in the door in Kansas and elsewhere to teach intelligent design, then wait for it, folks, because the next thing is going to be the flood. Because the flood is really important, because that's the counter to Armageddon. And all of these people are premillennial dispensationalists, to use a big philosophical term.
Mr.
They
Gaffney?
All believe well, that Armageddon is coming.
I'd like to speak to that, though. I mean, this idea that we're being used by the young earth creationists, Henry Morris, in one of his most recent publications, takes me on and criticizes me for my views on intelligent design and really says, you know, intelligent design, it's too small a program. Creationism is a package deal. Intelligent design, it's not the full gospel. It's not being faithful to the Christian message. So the thing is, we're getting it from the young earth creationists as well as from the Darwinian materialists. So, you know, to say that we're just being used, I mean, they're actually coming out against us at this point.
You know, when the time comes and they all get raptured up and you and I are left down, I'll still love you, Bill, but I think you're making a big mistake on this one. You people are being used by people who've got a much bigger agenda, people who are pushing these so-called moral values, the Terry Schiavo thing, anti-healthcare, pushing to go into Iraq and, as it were, you know, teach every other Arab the way that things are going to be and don't touch Israel. I think that you're being pushed by people with a much more right-wing agenda. And I think, you know, I think you're to be pitied rather than condemned.
But what you're focusing, though, on are the implications, the agendas. What about the merit of the ideas of intelligent design itself?
But
is
there
it
is
possible
no merit
to detect intelligence in... Well, we've authored a book together with Cambridge University Press. There's a lot
of
discussion about it.
There is some agreement. I'm going to have to step in again. Gentlemen, thank you very much. We have to take one more quick break, but I do want to get to the implications and the future of this agenda when we come back. Michael Roos and William Dembski. And Mr. Roos, you go first. In 10 years, will intelligent design be taught in more schools or fewer?
I think it's going to be taught in more. I think if George Bush gets a couple more of the kind of people he wants on the Supreme Court, we're going to see intelligent design within 10 years. And then I think all of those people who are sitting on their bottoms and not doing anything and saying it's somebody else's worry are going to be screaming when their kids come home being taught that kind of religious nonsense.
Mr. Dembski?
Well, I think Michael's got the timetable right. It takes about 10 years for somebody from high school to get a PhD and go on for a postdoc. And I do see the young generation latching onto these ideas with intelligent design and running with them. You've got to understand, Darwinism is totally status quo in the mainstream academy. So intelligent design, it's the new kid on the block, and there are some exciting ideas there if you just read the actual materials.
Well, at least you agree on one point about the next 10 years. Gentlemen, thank you both for a very lively debate. That's our report for today.
Ladies and gentlemen, Beck.
Yeah.
me coming to town with my stone. Straight down out the well with my fingers holding on the step. But I know all my troubles are hanging your trigger. Take your eyes and your mind from the road. Shoot your mouth if you know where you're aiming. Don't forget, pick up what you sow. Talking trash to the garbage around you. Na 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 na. Kicking the dog with my boots, pull down on the ditch and roll bubbles, snakes among the path of your room, handing out a confession of it. Heaven's drunk with the poison you use, charm the walls in the eyes of a gambler. Now I see it coming to you, hammer my bones in the anvil of daylight. That ghost is sweep away. These tongues are twisted, the good in us. It's all we know, there's too much love to taste. That's good, I won't give. Oh, that ghost is sweep away. These tongues are twisted, the good in us. It's all we know, there's too much love to taste. That's bitter.
They're trying to make a theocracy in this fucking country, you know? What they're trying to do is they're trying to take all the pleasure out of this world that we live in because this Christian right assholes, they're out to end the world. And the only reason they want to do that is to prove themselves right so that they can have the last word and scoff.
Are you serious?
Yeah, of course. That's exactly what they're doing. That's why Bush and these people have no idea of the future. They don't think about the future at all.
Why? Because it's all going to end in a river of fire?
Exactly. Exactly.
They want it to end.
They want it to end. Because it'll prove them right.
That's fucking nuts. Well, the world's over.
There's this great story I heard just recently that Tony Blair and George W. Bush and Ariel Sharon had a meeting to discuss the future of the Mideast and all this. And so they're talking back and forth in their nice, genteel way. And suddenly God appears in the room with them. And God, you know, has his hands on his hips, and he says, you people have just screwed it up. Everything I did for you, you just screwed it up. So I want to let you know that these are the end times. It's over with. You got a week. And then God just snaps his fingers and disappears. And they look at each other and go, oh, my God. And and Blair and Bush go back to Washington, and Sharon goes back to Jerusalem and Blair to London. And Bush and Blair basically say the same thing to their people. They say, well, we've got good news and bad news. The good news is that there is a God. We were right. There is a God. The bad news is the end of the world.
Oh.
But Sharon gets to Jerusalem and he says, well, I have some bad news and some good news. He says, the bad news is that God is about to end the world. And the good news is that there will never be a Palestinian state.
Okay, that was funny.
Yep. This is Bennett, and I have guests here.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. It's Rod.
Hi, my name is Rod.
And I'm hot.
And she's hot.
And there's hot. Yeah.
Together we are.
Hot Rod.
Hot Rod.
Hot Rod condoms.
Yeah, we are Hot Rod condoms.
And because, you know, no matter how bad things are,
kids want to fuck.
We can at least fuck, yes.
Kids? Yeah. What is with you and kids? You're like obsessed with kitty porn or something.
Uh oh. Don't say stuff.
It's not about.
God, that's bad.
Not about adults having sex with kids. It's about kids wanting to have sex with each other.
Yeah,
parents, when your kids want to fuck, and you know they will, give them a Hot Rod condom.
Which one? The regular ones or the Speed Strip?
Whichever one suits their fancy.
How many kinds of condoms are you selling?
We got two.
We just have two styles. Yeah. We have our original super sensitive, ultra thin condom.
The hot rod condom.
Sorry. And then we have our patented Speed Strip applicator condom.
That one's really cool. They did that. They did an example on Playboy TV, remember?
Yeah, and on Tech TV it was demonstrated.
It's
high tech.
Yeah, but the cool thing was, is on the porno one, they had these porn stars, they were naked, and they were like sticking their hands, like both their hands, in the condom, and it didn't break.
Wow.
Right. And he also, the guy
now
used...
That's a real test of truth.
Yeah.
Also, another thing is the guy had like this huge schlong, and it's a regular size condom, but he got it on with a Speed Strip applicator.
Yeah. Kind of like
And do Hot Rod condoms come with racing stripes?
No.
Jay won't let that. But wouldn't that be really cool? That or like glow in the dark or checkered flags.
That's the future.
Yeah, the boxes and the wrapping has like, you know, really cool Hot Rod flame designs.
Yeah, imagine pulling that out when you're about to do somebody. They'd be like, "Oh, what's that? Maybe we will use a condom."
Looks like fun.
Hey, we're talking about safety here.
Yes.
We're talking, you know, the AIDS.
Yeah, this is required safety equipment.
Back up.
For sex in the new millennium.
Yeah, we even sponsor, what was it that we sponsor? Where we give away the condom to the people that test porno actresses for AIDS?
Oh, AIM Healthcare.
Yes.
We give condoms.
Really? Yeah. I love it.
Isn't that cool?
And if you don't know what AIM Healthcare is, they do testing for all the adult actors and actresses. If you want, you know.
Make sure they're not carrying all kind of nastiness.
Right. So that they're, you know, they're good to go. And they also promote safe sex. They go to they do a lot of conventions. They hand out condoms at
and some of them are ours.
Adult industry conventions.
They hand out ours. That's totally cool.
Yeah.
So if our listeners who will register over time, this will still be being heard in a while in the future. So if our listeners want to get a hold of a Hot Rod condom, where do they go? What do they do?
Well,
you know, let me tell you. They should carry them in way more stores, okay?
They are in some stores.
They are, yes, but they should
What stores?
Very few.
Yeah, which ones, honey?
Well, locally here in L.A., we're in the Hustler store on Sunset.
Hooray!
Yay!
And we're also in the Hustler store in New Orleans on Bourbon Street. And there's another one. Oh, in San Diego.
Uh-huh.
But we have a lot of websites that carry our stuff. We've got our own, of course. And then there's Condomania, which provides, like, the best condoms anywhere. They carry ours.
Is that the condom website?
Yeah. That is the Condomania. Condom
website. Well, Condomania was the original condom store. They had the first condom store. And they actually still have a store in New York, and they also carry Hot Rod.
And they are Condomania.com, right?
Right.
Yes.
And then we're in some convenience stores on the East Coast. We've got some minor distribution.
Yeah, we have an East Coast distributor. He's lagging on orders, but he's already told us that it's been going super fast.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, they just picked us up at the beginning of the year, you know, and it's starting off slow because you got tax time and what have you, and sales don't, you know, sales of new products don't really pick up until, like, August, you know, through Christmas. That's when everyone's, like, in a buying frenzy. So we're kind of waiting to see what happens.
What we really want, though, is for people to realize that we're not like some sort of novelty condom. Like,
it's
an actual condom.
It does the job correctly.
You can use it, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
You know? Just because it says Hot Rod condoms and it looks all the boxes all
And these people ought to know because people who sell condoms have a lot of sex.
Yes. That's true.
Yeah,
I know
do.
I do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and on the
And your website is hotrodcondoms.com.
.com.
Oh, yeah, and also right now we're running a promotion. If you want to try a Hot Rod condom, you can try our regular super sensitive condom for free.
Yeah, yeah.
All you have to do is
push on this little condom box, and then you just it takes your name and your address and everything, and then we send you a free condom. Come on, what's better than that?
Yeah, nothing. Exactly. And I know all of our listeners are connected to the internet. So you can
be,
get
right?
there.
What else? What else? What else is going on?
Well, have you guys had any morality police after you just by existing?
Tell me about the NASCAR
are you offensive?
Story.
I got some death threats.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have people sending me emails.
For saving life.
Right. Yeah, you can't have that. We want more kids. We want more unwanted kids running the streets with guns. That's what
welfare.
We want. Right.
Oh, hey, but tell them about the NASCAR story.
Oh, yeah, NASCAR.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it was a SCCA race at Laguna Seca Raceway.
Uh-huh.
And I did an interview on the speaker system. There was like 120,000 people in attendance at this race. And, you know, the announcer just loved Hot Rod Condoms. He loved saying it. Like, every time the race car would go by, he'd go, there goes a Hot Rod Condoms car.
Yeah.
The story of how it got to be the Hot Rod Condoms car.
Well, no, I was there to sponsor the car.
You sponsored a car?
Yeah, we sponsored the car.
In a race. That's great.
In a race, yeah. A couple races, actually. And then what happened was track...
It does fit.
So, the announcer says, hey, if you want to get Hot Rod condoms, we're handing them out free in pit row. Go down to pit row and get yourself a Hot Rod condom. Okay, the track people, the people that run the track got upset. They couldn't believe we were handing out condoms at the racetrack.
That's great.
They're Hot Rod condoms.
I told you that
was
a great story.
Right. So, so they go down, and all of a sudden there's like this big thing going on. Yeah, uproar. These people are all uptight about us handing out condoms, and they're determined to shut us down. They're like, you got to pack it up and go. Get the hell out of here.
You can't hand out stuff at the racetrack.
Yeah, we can't have, anything to do with,
with
condoms,
sex,
yeah.
With
they couldn't get the images out of their heads of
tell
big cocks with condoms
did.
Going on them or something. they're the ones with the problem.
Yeah,
they're not getting enough of it. So.
Tell them what the drivers did.
Well, hold on.
Sorry. Getting ahead of myself apparently.
So they shut us down, and we were pointing out that they came to us and said you can't be giving things away. They wanted to pretend like it wasn't about condoms. They said we can't have people giving away free product in pit row. Okay, we're in a line of all these booths that are all there to give stuff away. So that argument, we shut that argument down.
There's politics for you.
Right. And then what happened was they did shut us down and for about half an hour because we just moved our table. We actually moved our table over to where our car was that we were sponsoring, and we started giving the condoms away. But in the meantime, all the racers at the track found out what had happened.
Yep.
And they got really upset. And they said, so they all started coming to our booth. Give us stickers. We'll put your logo on our helmets and on our cars. And
yes.
It was awesome. And then the track announcer found out what happened. And he also, every time the car went by, he'd go, there again, there goes the Hot Rod Condoms car. He kept rubbing it in their faces. It was awesome.
That was great.
Yeah. So that was pretty fun.
Well, I thank you guys for coming by. I think this was
problem.
Great.
We had a great
because,
time.
This is important stuff, and it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's healthy, and we need to know. We're not a commercial radio station, Kill Radio, but I'm telling you, don't just get a free condom, buy some of these suckers.
Yeah, another thing is we're not owned by a big corporation. This is like a mom and pop.
Little grassroots thing, huh?
Yeah, and even though the packaging looks all professional and they're like super high quality condoms, I'm not owned by the company's not a conglomerate. It's not owned by a huge corporation like all the other brands. I started this thing to be a an underground. I've always believed in punk businesses.
Uh huh.
And I've always run punk businesses. I had like a small record label, and
yeah.
I had a T-shirt, printing company, and this was just like the next logical step. I wanted to, spread the word about safe sex, and I wanted to
hopefully make a little money.
Yeah, and I wasn't excited about condoms, and I'm thinking, okay, people need to use condoms, but you go to the
store, business cannot fail.
You go to the store, and the condom boxes, had like silhouettes of couples kissing on the beach and stuff.
Yeah, who wants a condom like that?
Right.
Like some old Harlequin romance novel.
It's got to be more exciting. You got to make people... Sex is exciting. Sex isn't, like, boring and clinical, right? So that was my whole idea. And that's where Hot Rod condoms came from.
And with Hot Rod, you're also targeting the right audience because it is the young people.
Right, young people.
The most.
No one understood that. But actually, in the last 5 years... All the major brands are actually starting to follow my lead. You'll notice that the colors are getting a little more
brighter.
Durex has a brand out now that's basically they stole my packaging design. They got flames on their freaking box, you know. So I have had some sort of impact on the industry.
Having an impact on the business.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for today, and maybe we'll have you back sometime.
Sounds cool.
Thank you both for coming by.
Thank you.
And this is Kill Radio. Thanks for listening.
Can I tell you a secret? My man uses Levitra. And let's just say that there have been big changes in the bedroom.
Honey, who are you talking to?
Oh, I was just telling them about Levitra. It's really improved the quality of Keith's erection.
No, don't say my name. Are you crazy? I'm a fireman.
But Levitra has changed our lives. It's really enhanced my husband's erectile quality.
Whoa. Put the brakes on. That's nobody's business. And for the record, I didn't need enhancing. I did it as a goof.
Honey, you've had trouble getting erect our entire marriage.
God bless it, woman. Is nothing sacred to you? I need to cool off. Okay? Let's just drop this, and we'll talk about it later.
Okay. Whatever you say, you're the boss.
Okay, I'm gonna go for a walk.
For my guy, Levitra works real fast. And before, my arm would get tired trying to get him up to speed. When he was 12, he was in the locker room and some jocks pulled his pants down.
What are you doing? What are you doing? You're killing me here. Honey, I asked you to not talk about this stuff.
Come on, honey, take some Levitra.
I don't want to take any Levitra, Christine. It's the middle of the afternoon.
Please, take some Levitra for me.
Okay. Okay, fine. I'll take some Levitra, but you have to make me a promise. Okay, you have to promise me you won't tell anybody about this stuff ever again, ever.
It's a deal. Come on.
They're not coming up.
But I want them to see your little Levitra in action.
No. Get out. Get out of my house. Get out of the house. Get out. Move. Out.
If your erection lasts longer than 48 hours, seek immediate medical attention. Levitra, it's about the quality of your boner.
Hi, it's working. He's doing it.
Who are you talking to? Oh my God! Come on, man! Come on now! With this thing going.
In 1999, we had located Bin Laden at a hunting camp, where some Arab princesses were also hunting with him, and there was a big discussion debate whether or not to launch cruise missiles and take out Bin Laden. Why didn't we do it?
The debate came down to the fact that we would be using cruise missiles and that this camp would be undoubtedly totally destroyed. There were a number of princes from the United Arab Emirates. This was a camp that was being supported by the UAE government. UAE military C-130s were supplying these guys with the amenities that they needed. Bin Laden was there. And the debate, we had the plan. Our guys had scoped the camp out, put a beacon down so that we knew that was the exact camp. And then it got into, well, what tent does Bin Laden sleep in? Where does he eat? Where does he go to the bathroom? So these kinds of questions dragged on and on for 2 weeks. And finally, the administration's decision was not to take the strike because of the collateral damage that would occur.
This is the Clinton administration.
Yes.
You're convinced we could have gotten Bin Laden then?
Absolutely. Our guys had eyes on him. But
and the what ifs, this was in 1999, 2 years before 2001.
Exactly, the what ifs.
Let me turn to Bin Laden and the president's comments on September 17th, 2001. Here's George W. Bush.
I want justice. And There's an old poster out west, as I recall, that said wanted, dead or alive.
In December of 2001, the Battle of Tora Bora, and this is what you write. In early 2002, in the immediate aftermath of the Battle at Tora Bora and the subsequent escape of Osama bin Laden and his chief lieutenant, Ayman al-Zahari, CIA and specially trained U.S. military special operation units began to organize teams in the provincial areas east and southeast of Kabul along Afghanistan's border with Pakistan. You have no doubt that bin Laden escaped at Tora Bora.
No doubt at all. When the first film videotape that he made afterwards shows him that he was holding his left side and was probably wounded there in the battle. Every bit of information that we had at the time indicated that he had escaped and moved into the Waziristan area, which is south of Peshawar.
How did he get away?
We had followed the same lead we had taken since September of 01 in defeating the Taliban. We were attacking with U.S. military forces against the al-Qaeda and Taliban militants, and we hired local tribal leaders to guard the escape routes into Pakistan. Unfortunately,
this is CIA officer Gary Schroen on Meet the Press last Sunday morning, May 8th. And yeah, this is the very discussion where he talks about bin Laden's head in the box. But that's not what I thought was interesting here.
Many of those people proved to be loyal to bin Laden and sympathizers with the Taliban, and they allowed the key guys to escape.
In the heat of the presidential campaign in 2004, John Kerry, as part of his stump speech, in effect, would say things like this. Let's watch.
As I have said for 2 years now, when Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda were cornered in the mountains of Tora Bora, it was wrong to outsource the job of capturing them to Afghan warlords who a week earlier were fighting against us.
Should we have had more U.S. troops in Afghanistan circling Tora Bora to prevent his escape?
In hindsight, that would have been ideal. We fought a special operations war with CIA and Army Green Berets on the ground directing the bombing campaign. It was only late in the campaign that U.S. ground forces came in. And the evolution, I think, simply we didn't take it far enough. If we'd have had one more battle after Tora Bora, we probably would have gotten it right.
Again, in October of 2004 in the presidential campaign, after John Kerry made those charges, General Tommy Franks offered this observation. We don't know to this day whether Mr. bin Laden was at Tora Bora in December 2001. Mr. bin Laden was never within our grasp. You just disagree with that.
I absolutely do, yes.
And President Bush and Vice President Cheney all quoted General Frank saying, we don't know if bin Laden was at Tora Bora. You don't have any, you have no doubt.
I have no doubt that he was there.
Let me turn again to your book. The United States is continuing to pour billions of dollars and sacrifice a lot.
And a little more from Gary Schroen.
Let me turn again to your book. The United States is continuing to pour billions of dollars and sacrifice the lives of American soldiers in order to bring peace and democracy to Iraq. This is being done at the expense of Afghanistan. Given the total preoccupation with Iraq, I am not confident that the U.S. government will make the policy adjustments necessary to improve conditions for the success of the democratic experiment in Afghanistan, or refocus diplomatic and military efforts back to the South Asia region in order to capture Osama bin Laden and defeat al-Qaeda. The opportunity to make these changes exists now. If we fail in these efforts, we do so at our peril. Are you suggesting, do you believe that Iraq is a distraction, a preoccupation, and it is really limiting our ability to capture Osama bin Laden and secure Afghanistan?
I absolutely do. Afghanistan gets a distant second on all aspects, whether it's going to be military or aid that's going to be given to the country. Afghanistan is, the elections were successful. There is a beginning of democracy there. It's very fragile. But I think the entire population wants peace. It's a matter of how they share the pie. And we could do a lot more to bring that democracy to full birth if we were focused more attention, more money on that country.
Which is more important, do you believe, to the war on terrorism, Afghanistan or Iraq?
At this point, unfortunately, the Iraqi situation has gotten so large that it's become a major issue that has to be dealt with. I think, though, that ultimately we owe it to Afghanistan and to ourselves to end this al-Qaeda threat there and defeat the Taliban completely and let that country move forward. So
we're still stuck between Iraq and a hard place, I really think. And and it just twists away, don't you know? This is still the Impressionistic News Hour with one last piece.
Rare as they are, super twisters can strike anywhere, anytime. But no one knows why. In fact, scientists are stumped about what causes any tornado, large or small. Unless they can solve the puzzle and figure out how a supercell thunderstorm creates a tornado, then predicting super twisters will be impossible. How do you decipher the inner workings of a tornado?
Meteorology, in contrast to chemistry or biology, is not a good laboratory science. We can't produce an accurate representation, a controlled representation of a thunderstorm, and change the variables one by one to make tornadoes.
No one can create a real tornado, either on the plains or in a lab. But there is one place where scientists can play puppeteer with the weather. In a computer.
The closest approximation we have are computer simulations, and we try to build a digital computational model of the tornado and see if we can change variables and have storms that produce tornadoes and ones that don't.
One of the leaders in tornado computer modeling is Lou Wicker.
It doesn't have good rotation. We're not going to deploy. Cyclone data?
20 years ago, Lou was a young and eager storm chaser, tracking tornadoes the old-fashioned way on the open plains.
Let's move. Let's go. We're moving west. A little farther, Steve. A little farther. Peak the hill. Peak the hill.
Back then, researchers thought the best way to learn about a tornado was to leave special sensors in its path. That was the idea behind TOTO, a weather station the size of an oil drum. Lou took charge of getting Toto as close as possible to a tornado without wiping out the research team.
Let's go, let's go, let's go! Well,
in the 70s and the early 80s, we're just trying to understand what made storms work sort of visually. Now we're moving into an era where we're trying to understand the dynamics of storms. Inside storms, dynamics means how the individual blobs of air are all interacting with each other to produce the flow that becomes either the strong winds or even the tornado or even the things that produce hail.
Based on years of weather research, Lou produces an amazingly detailed computer simulation designed with scientists at the University of Illinois. It reveals a familiar pattern. A thunderstorm explodes into the atmosphere, growing more intense every minute. The clouds begin to spin and roil high in the sky. They descend closer to the ground, still swirling rapidly. Suddenly, the rotation narrows and intensifies and touches down to Earth. The question on everyone's mind is, what triggers that final step? What makes the tornado form?
Somehow, supercell thunderstorms are able to bring intense rotation and intensify that rotation near the surface. And we don't understand that process very well. We know that before a tornado forms, there are areas of rotation in the thunderstorm. What we don't understand is how that rotation is brought down to the ground and intensified in a very short period of time in order to make a tornado.
In the search for a trigger, one of the primary suspects has been a burst of air descending from the storm, called a downdraft. The idea is that the downdraft wraps around the storm, tightening and intensifying the rotation.
We think the downdraft is really important for producing the tornado because it helps sort of squeeze the air from near the ground up into the updraft.
the air wraps around and sort of the downdraft kind of comes around and squeezes the air in the front and the back together to kind of squirt the air up off the ground.
In the minutes before a twister forms, storm chasers often see a downdraft blasting a hole in the clouds toward the rear of the storm.
Well, it's a very impressive storm. So far, there's still no tornado. But the structure looks quite good. We're seeing a very strong RFD coming down. On the radar, it's still looking pretty good.
But just as often, a tornado fails to materialize. There must be more to the story.
It's very likely that in order to solve the tornado problem, we're going to need a lot more data than we have right now, because a lot of things are going on at very small scales that we don't actually sample. And so until we have that, it will remain a research problem.
And that's what you've been listening to, a research problem. On the Thursday Impressionistic News Hour for the 12th of May, 2005. Yes, it's about 7 o'clock here in Los Angeles time. And we heard bits and pieces about the weather, about chasing bin Laden, because we never hear about bin Laden anymore. And about condoms and sex. The way out is the way in, if you catch my drift. And the music, that was Beck Hansen doing E-Pro, which I guess is his latest, from his latest album, that was live on Saturday Night Live a couple weeks ago. Thought that was fairly dynamic for a Scientologist. Anyway, that's it for the Impressionistic News Hour today. I hope you've gotten some entertainment and some education out of it. Yes, sometimes the Impressionistic News is educational. And and don't forget about the head of Homeland Security. What's his name? McCafferty? I don't trust him. Do you? Listen to my music show, The Chill Room, on Saturday nights at midnight. And, really. And, thank you very much for listening to Kill Radio. Don't forget to kill your friends.